All right. Good morning, everybody. Good morning, all you magnificent melon heads of the world. Happy Thursday, everybody. Today is February 12th, 2026. And our top story this morning, I'm just so delighted to see this finally making news. And I'm sitting here like, where the hell have you guys been this whole time? The shady accounting practices and artificial intelligence, in particular by some of the big hyperscalers and big tech, are finally getting at least a trifle sum of scrutiny, which feels like, you know, a significant yet or insignificant yet symbolic gesture to me. Ernst & Young, in particular, yesterday, Meta's auditor, Ernst & Young, one of the big four accounting firms, they flagged the off-balance sheet accounting, in particular, that $27 billion deal that they cut with Blue Owl Capital, where Blue Owl and Meta create this joint venture. Blue Owl goes out and borrows billions of dollars to pay for this data center construction that Meta is going to run, and Meta is going to, they're going to operate it and make all the decisions. Basically, all of the debt that Meta is taking out to pay for this data center will not show up on their books, will not show up on their quarterly earnings. And, you know, that's basically off balance sheet. That's known as a special purpose vehicle. And that is freaking exactly what Enron did, is they called them Raptors, special purpose entities, SPEs, whatever you want to call them, all these funny names for it. They hid their debt from public scrutiny. And I remember when this was announced months ago, and I'm sitting here, I'm screaming from the top of my lungs on this channel, like, look what they're doing. It's Enron, except Enron at least pretended to try to hide it. They're doing it out in the open. Like, look how awesome my fraud is. And I've been sitting here the whole time like,
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
And finally, some of the auditors are flagging it. And I mean, it's like, hey, great. Welcome to the party, pal. I'm glad you guys are here. I'm glad auditors are finally out there doing auditor shit. But what took you so long? They flagged this as a critical audit matter. And a critical audit matter is like, basically, they raise a red flag in their reports and they say, guys, this one thing that the company did, this is really, really bad here. This is, we're not so sure if it's the right thing or not. It required a lot of opinion, a lot of subjective analysis, and we're just putting a giant asterisk next to it to let you know that we're not really sure. And this is very unusual to see something like this in a big tech accounting matter. So, hey, look, great. That's finally going on. XAI is doing the same thing. We just talked about that earlier this week, that they're setting up special purpose vehicles to take out data center loans because the hyperscalers have burned through some of the most tremendous cash flow the world has ever seen. I mean, these companies are immensely profitable and they are wiping out their cash flow to pay for this silly science project. And now they're taking on tens of billions of dollars of debt on top of that. And again, that debt, where is it ultimately going to reside? It's going to reside in your pension, in your 401k. Now, even as this is all going on, we got an article in the Wall Street Journal this morning. Big tech's accounting creates a blind spot in the AI boom. Now, this isn't talking about the off-balance sheet accounting. This is talking about that other big giant accounting fraud. No, not the round tripping and the circle jerk economics. The other big accounting fraud that's associated with AI, and that is the hiding of depreciation expenses. In particular, the lack of transparency and how these companies are artificially extending the useful lives of their equipment. Now, look, every penny of CapEx that a big tech company spends will one day result in a penny of depreciation expense, right? All the equipment that they're buying has a useful life, and eventually that useful life comes to an end. And in between, they've got to make a profit, which none of them are doing, not even close. They're actually losing money at ridiculous rates with this equipment. But this has basically been the gist of Michael Burry's short thesis. Dr. Michael Burry of Big Short fame, he was played by Christian Bale in The Big Short. He came out and he said, look, all these big tech companies have a tidal wave of depreciation expenses coming in the next few years. They're all lying or otherwise hiding how big of a problem this is going to be for them. And that's the gist of Dr. Burry's short. And look, it makes sense. Every time they increase the useful life of their equipment, they magically create billions of dollars of equipment or of earnings by hiding their equipment expense. It's just one of many accounting frauds going on in AI. Oh, wait, we've got another one this morning. Yep, you get an accounting fraud. You get an accounting fraud. You do. SoftBank has come out and they said they swung to a profit last quarter. In particular, SoftBank says that they made $4.2 billion of profit off of their stake in OpenAI. Now, how did they make $4.2 billion in profit off of their stake in OpenAI? Because OpenAI does not make a profit. It is a cash incinerating inferno. It's where money goes to die. Well, here's what happened. That OpenAI raised money at a $500 billion valuation recently. And hey, as a matter of fact, SoftBank participated in that cap raise. They participated in that funding round. So SoftBank also participated in the prior funding round. So let me put this in plain terms, how SoftBank manufactured this profit out of thin air. Let's say I buy a Beanie Baby from you for $5. All right, I give you $5. I've got my Beanie Baby. And then I buy another Beanie Baby from you, an identical one, and I pay you $10 for this second Beanie Baby. And then I say, I just made a $5 profit on my first Beanie Baby because it's now worth $10 because the most recent one sold for $10. That is what OpenAI and SoftBank just did. And that is where SoftBank's profit came from. So hey, you go. You got another BS accounting measure going on today. The next best thing in the world, it's the greatest thing since sliced bread, artificial intelligence. It doesn't make any money. It will never make any money. But somehow, magically, profit just keeps materializing out of thin air. Trust me, bro. And here I've been for almost 3 years now screaming about this. I thought I was the only one. Finally, somebody in the mainstream press is asking these questions after endlessly cheerleading for this garbage for years.
I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
And I just love the Mugatu meme. I mean, it summarizes everything perfectly. All right, so that's the AI thing going on this morning. We've also got the U.S. and Japan is close to a deal or close to working out the details of the prior deal, the trade deal that was or wasn't a deal, depending on which side of the aisle you're on. There was that $550 billion of investment in the U.S. That was one of the terms to get President Trump to lower his tariffs on Japan and also dramatically reduce the tariffs on autos. That $550 billion appears to be steered towards energy, semiconductor manufacturing, and data centers. Oh, good. More money for data centers. That's just what we need. Nothing in shipbuilding. You know, Japan is the third biggest shipbuilder in the world behind South Korea and China. We have a massive shipbuilding disadvantage with the Chinese, and we are like sleepwalking into World War III on the Pacific with the Chinese. We've got $550 billion of investment coming our way from the world's third biggest shipbuilder. And what are we using that money for? Not to build ships. No, we're going to build more freaking data centers to run the chatbots. Hey, I just report the news, guys. I don't make these decisions. What else is going on this morning? Cisco reported their earnings. It was a big beat by Cisco, but the forecast underwhelmed. That stock is down this morning. QVC is in talks with creditors to file for bankruptcy. So who had the lady from Shark Tank going bankrupt on their 2020s bingo card? I guess it's not surprising, right? QVC going bankrupt. Does anybody order jewelry over the phone while watching TV anymore? How has that business even survived this long? Kind of makes me wonder, but that's going on this morning. We've got an update on El Paso and what happened with the airspace closure yesterday. What else is going on here? Okay, we've got two Israelis were just arrested. Get this, two Israelis, one of whom was a reservist in the Israeli army. They were arrested for using classified intelligence to place bets on Polymarket. Look, guys, if you're on Polymarket and you're making bets, understand you are playing in a deliberately rigged casino. And when I say that, even that doesn't do it justice because all the casinos are rigged in the house's favor, right? The house always wins, all that stuff. But it's by a small percentage. People on average lose money in Polymarket even faster than they lose money in the casinos. And the people who are on Polymarket have better information than you do. And they're betting on insider information. For example, an Israeli reservist who just received a classified briefing on military action is betting on that military action on Polymarket. Oh, my God. Talk about degeneracy. And as this is going on, we've got an article about the CFTC's office in Chicago. where they have now basically fired, laid off, or resigned every single enforcement attorney at the CFTC office in Chicago, which is the Chicago, the home to the CFTC, also home to the Chicago Futures Exchange, the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. Not a single attorney left at the CFTC Chicago field office. And we wonder why fraud is institutionalized. And remember, the CFTC, that's like everything the SEC punts on, which is pretty much everything, falls to the CFTC to regulate, and they've got no attorneys at their marquee field office. And we wonder why fraud is rampant everywhere. And to wrap up the show, we've got more warnings about private credit. We've got bad pick. What does that mean? No, it's not the Eagles in the NFL draft. We're talking about payment in kind. The bad kind is on the rise, more debt going bad. They're extending and pretending the terms, even as credit spreads tighten in private credit markets, which means people are paying higher and higher prices for this debt that's going bad at higher and higher rates. How does that make sense? Well, unfortunately, it involves your retirement, as always. Guys, we got a lot going on this morning. Why don't we shrink my big melon of a head and let's see what's going on in the world of finance today. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for you new guys so you can come back tomorrow and have your coffee with the melon heads, because we do this every business day. And right now, the S&P 500 is higher by 21 points, or 0.3% higher this morning. The Dow is up by a similar amount, 0.28% in the green, 138 points up for the Dow. And the NASDAQ is leading the way higher by 0.32%, 80 points higher for the NASDAQ. The dollar, which I am remiss, I didn't get my chart ready yet. The DXY is at 96.81, off by about 11 basis points here. So slightly weaker dollar. Over the last couple of days, we've seen the dollar weaken a little bit, giving back some of the gains that we saw in the aftermath of Kevin Warsh's nomination at the Federal Reserve. Looking over at the bond market, we've got all quiet on the Western Front this morning. 30-year Treasury, 4.792. That's down by 2 points and change. The 10-year yield is at 4.164, down almost 1 basis point. The 2 years at 3.510, off by a fraction of a point. And the 1 month is down 1 basis point to 3.690. Looking over at the commodities board, we've got metals are quiet this morning. That's a few days in a row now. I'd like to see that. Even though it's red, I'd like to see the volatility easing a little bit here. Spot gold, $5,064. That's lower by about 20 bucks or 0.4% this morning. April gold futures at 5,087, off by 10 bucks and a quarter, about 10 bucks here now, 0.21% lower. Spot silver is at $83 even, off by $1.30 or 1.55%. March COMEX silver futures are at 82.85. That's lower by $1.06 or a little more than 1.33%. Look, a $1 move in silver. When's the last time we saw that? It's red. It's moving in the wrong direction. I get it. But at the very least, consider how far we've come from the $15 intraday swings we were seeing just a week ago. I like to see metals calming down. This is a few days in a row now. If we see this for a little while longer, I might even consider buying some more here. Looking at copper, it's basically unchanged here, down 0.1% for the day. Platinum is lower by 1%. Palladium is lower by 0.8%. WTI crude oil is off by about 40 cents here, 0.2% at 64.19 for March West Texas Intermediate. Looking over at Bitcoin this morning, it is lower than we were yesterday, 67,956. We hit an intraday low yesterday of about 65,000 and change. So Bitcoin still not looking so good. And we had an interesting story developed yesterday. Not a big story, but I believe the first of many to come. This one in CoinDesk, institutional crypto platform BlockFills said to halt withdrawals and restrict trading. Now, BlockFills, this is not a big outfit. I've never even heard of them before yesterday. But the fact that withdrawals are halted, we're going to see stuff like this. We see this every crypto winter, and it usually precedes the collapse of a firm. It's shades of 2022 when any number of crypto platforms were forced to suspend withdrawals as prices crumbled. Amid sharp, mostly downward volatility in crypto markets, BlockFills has halted withdrawals and restricted trading on its platform, a person familiar with the matter told CoinDesk. Clients were informed of the decision by internal email, according to the Miner Mag. Based in Chicago and backed in part by market-making giant Susquehanna Investment Group, Blockfills saw $60 billion in trading volume last year, according to the Financial Times. All right, that $60 billion number, that is somewhat deceiving. That is trading volume. That is the sum of all buys and sells that took place on the platform throughout the entire year. So $60 billion in volume, contrast that with, say, Binance that sees several trillion in volume every year. This is a very small platform. In light of recent market and financial conditions and to further the protection of clients and the firm, Blockfills took the action last week of temporarily suspending client deposits and withdrawals, a spokesperson told the newspaper. And isn't it always for your own good when they lock you out of your own money? It's amazing how it's always for your own good that they do that. The action is reminiscent of 2022's crypto winter, which saw numerous platforms forced to suspend withdrawals as the bear market deepened, with many of them ultimately collapsing once again for your own good. So look, small platform, not a huge issue, but keep an eye on this. I think we're going to see a lot more of these. On to the big one of the day this morning. Meta auditor Ernst & Young raised red flag on data center accounting. Nice of you guys to show up to work today. Finally, somebody talking about this stuff. Meta Platform's latest annual report contained an unusual cautionary note for investors. The tech giant's auditor Ernst & Young raised a red flag over the financial engineering Meta used to keep a $27 billion data center project off its balance sheet. While EY ultimately blessed Meta's accounting treatment, the firm flagged it as a critical audit matter, or a CAM. This means it was one of the hardest, riskiest judgments the auditor had to make. Such a warning label is rare for a specific high-profile transaction at a major audit client. Meta moved the data center project called Hyperion off its books in October into a new joint venture with Blue Owl Capital. Blue Owl is like ground zero for the private credit bubble, by the way. Meta owns 20% of the venture. Funds managed by Blue Owl own another 80%. A holding company called Baynet Investor, which owns the Blue Owl portion, sold a then record $27.3 billion of bonds to investors. The joint venture is known, as in accounting parlance, as a variable interest entity, or a VIE. Meta said it isn't the primary beneficiary of the entity, and so it didn't have to put the venture's assets and liabilities on its own balance sheet. Meta's assertion that it lacks power over the venture is debatable and has drawn scrutiny from investors and lawmakers. Meta is a hyperscaler and knows how to run data centers for AI, while Blue Owl is a financier. Whether the venture succeeds economically will come down to Meta's decisions and know-how. In its report, EY said auditing Meta's decision was especially challenging due to the significant judgment required in determining the activities that most significantly affect the VIE's economic performance. In other words, Meta's full of shit, and the accountants or the auditors are covering their tracks by at least flagging this blatantly fraudulent accounting mechanism. Four Democratic senators, including Elizabeth Warren, in a January 22nd letter, asked the Financial Stability Oversight Council, led by Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, to investigate the risks that AI-related debt posed to the financial system. A growing share of these financing arrangements are convoluted and opaque, making it easier for companies to obscure the true nature of their balance sheets, they wrote. Meta's joint venture with Blue Owl exemplifies this type of arrangement. So finally, somebody asking questions. It only took them 3 years. And as this is going on, we've got the Wall Street Journal also asking questions about other accounting here. Big tech accounting creates a blind spot in the AI boom. Depreciation expenses are about to soar, making a lack of transparency a growing problem. Remember, every penny of this CapEx will come back to haunt them in their earnings some later date when that CapEx is depreciated. Just five big tech companies are projecting to spend a total of $3 trillion on property and equipment over the next 4 years, and that rapid growth is making it harder to analyze their earnings. The surge in capital spending for things like new gigantic data centers means depreciation expenses will be soaring in the coming years. Much of the equipment these companies are buying, such as chips for AI, will be gradually written down in value over 5 or 6 years, hitting profits. As CapEx has skyrocketed, controversies have occasionally flared over companies' moves to extend the useful lives of the assets they are depreciating. Even a small adjustment to an asset's useful life can have a big impact on earnings. Meta said its $60.5 billion of earnings last year included a $2.6 billion boost from lengthening the estimates for the useful lives of its servers and network assets. In other words, they just change a line item on their balance sheet and poof, $2.6 billion of profit appears because we artificially extended the useful life of this equipment. One major issue, investors can't find depreciation expenses listed on the income statements for Alphabet, Amazon, Meta, Microsoft, or Oracle. Nor is there any consistency among the companies in how they choose to report these costs. While this is a problem across many industries, not just tech, it's becoming more acute at the biggest AI hyperscalers. Apart from Amazon, which has long operated a massive logistics network, these companies are transforming from asset-light to asset-heavy businesses. Contrast the tech companies' reporting methods with the longstanding approach by two railroads, for example, in a quintessentially asset-heavy industry, Union Pacific and Norfolk Southern each report depreciation as a standalone operating expense on the income statement. That way, investors know the other expense lines don't include any of it. Big tech does not do that. So there's this massive negative earnings lurking on the horizon for all of these companies, which everybody is disproportionately allocated to, whether they realize it or not, because the concentration in the S&P 500 has become more acute than it's been, well, ever. And, well, accounting gimmicks, they're everywhere. And here's another one. SoftBank says it made $4.2 billion from its OpenAI investment in the last quarter. Now, how did they do that? By paying even more for another chunk of OpenAI. SoftBank, the Japanese tech investor that is aggressively pursuing what it calls artificial superintelligence, said on Thursday it recorded a $4.2 billion gain in the last quarter on its 11% stake in OpenAI. The OpenAI valuation surge is a bit circular. There we go again with that circular. Just grab the joystick to your right and avoid eye contact, everybody. As SoftBank itself participated in the October secondary share sale of $6.6 billion, where the ChatGPT maker received a $500 billion valuation, SoftBank now says it made a $19.8 billion from its investment in OpenAI. SoftBank says it closed the fiscal third quarter worth 30.9 trillion yen or $197.6 billion and says it's now worth 33.1 billion yen as of Wednesday's close. That implies the stock trades at a 19% discount to net asset value, maybe because everybody knows that net asset value isn't real. And again, guys, the analogy of the Beanie Baby. This is how SoftBank manufactured $4.2 billion of profit. I buy one Beanie Baby from you at $5. I buy the second Beanie Baby from you at $10, and then I mark up the first one to a $5 profit because they now trade at $10, even though it's just me doing it. That's how OpenAI and SoftBank manufactured a profit. OpenAI, by the way, loses money, in case I haven't said that over and over again for months now. Meanwhile, the U.S. and Japan zero in on energy and chips for the $550 billion fund. We're building the wrong things. Once again, the U.S. and Japan are closing in on the first three projects to fund Tokyo's $550 billion investment vehicle, according to people familiar with the matter, as the nations seek to set in motion a key component of their bilateral trade deal reached last year. The three projects considered finalists in the review process are related to a data center infrastructure project led by SoftBank, oh good, a deep sea oil terminal in the Gulf of Mexico, and synthetic diamonds for semiconductors, according to people who spoke on condition of anonymity in discussing the content of private negotiations. SoftBank didn't immediately respond to a request for comment. Discussions between U.S. Commerce Secretary Howard Lutnick and Japanese Trade Minister Ryusei Akazawa will determine whether the two sides are able to reach a final pact. The two men are scheduled to meet in Washington on Thursday. According to Japan's trade ministry, there's no guarantee a decision will be reached this week. Look, we need to be building ships, guys. All this money we're spending on data centers, we should be spending them on boats, and we're not. That's going to come back to haunt us. Meanwhile, we have got Cisco earnings just dropped, and the company's not trading so well. Cisco stock drops 7% on mediocre forecast, even as earnings and revenue top estimates. Cisco reported better than expected quarterly results on Wednesday, but the stock dropped about 7% in extended trading as earnings guidance for the current period only met estimates. Earnings per share were $1.04 versus $1.02 expected. That's a beat. Revenue $15.35 billion versus $15.12 billion. That's also a beat. They grew revenue about 10% from $14 billion a year earlier. Net income also increased to $3.18 billion from $2.43 billion a year earlier. The adjusted figure excludes stock-based compensation costs, which are substantial for tech companies. For the current period, Cisco expects $1.02 to $1.04 in adjusted earnings per share and $15.4 to $15.6 billion in revenue. That's only marginally better than what analysts were expecting. And it looks like it's that forecast that is driving Cisco stock this morning. Let's refresh this one and see what it's trading at. Currently down 7%, trading at $79.53, off by $6. By the way, while we're talking about this big tech bubble that we're in, an interesting thing you'll notice in the Cisco chart, if we zoom way back, all the way to the 1990s, you may notice that Cisco only this year finally reached the same value that it traded at the height of the dot-com bubble. For 26 years, this company has been stranded money. If you bought this stock in 2001, you just broke even. You just broke even this year. Goes to show you what's going to happen to these AI bubble stocks after this bubble bursts. And by many measures, the AI bubble is far worse than the dot-com bubble. So congratulations on breaking even after 26 years to Cisco shareholders, although you're giving up about 7% this morning. Meanwhile, QVC is in creditor talks to restructure debt in bankruptcy. This isn't very surprising here, honestly. QVC, like, look, it's the home shopping network on TV. You call up on a phone and you buy jewelry that you saw on TV. I'm really not surprised. I'm more surprised that this company even still exists in 2026. But I just thought this was kind of interesting because, you know, Lori's one of the stars of Shark Tank and QVC was her marquee business. I'm sure she's just fine. She owns hundreds of other businesses as well. But sign of the times, QVC in talks to restructure into bankruptcy. We also got an update on whatever the hell happened in El Paso yesterday. The Pentagon let the Border Patrol use an anti-drone laser, and that is what ultimately caused the FAA to close their El Paso airspace yesterday. So a couple of things. Number one, the anti-drone lasers, apparently they work. That's encouraging from a military perspective because figuring out what to do with the threat of drones has been a big issue, especially for the Navy, who has been shooting down $20,000 drones with $2 million interceptors. So, okay, good news. The laser works. Also mentioned in this article was that last week they went to use this laser on what they thought was a drone, and it ended up being a Mylar balloon, you know, like some kid let go of a party balloon, and they shot it down with the laser. And so I guess when the Border Patrol and the military started using this laser, the guy at the FAA was like, last week you shot down what you thought was a drone. It ended up being a balloon. How can you guarantee you're not shooting down commercial aircraft with this thing? And he just made the conservative decision to shut down airspace over the whole city. Somewhat shows the siloed interest. The FAA is responsible for air safety. The Border Patrol and the military are responsible for defense. Those two priorities were in conflict yesterday, and it caused a real problem for a city of 1 million people. And guys, this is going to become more common. Now, I mean, think about the drone attacks that we've seen in Ukraine, the attack on the Russian bomber fleet deep inside Russian territory last year, the Israeli attack on the Iranians that disabled their air defenses earlier late last year. If things ever do pop off in the South China Sea, I think it's foolish to expect that there aren't already thousands of these drones sitting in the United States lying in wait to be activated. And, well, if that does happen, you can expect more stories like this. Let's just put it that way. So I think we'll probably see these again in the future. That's what happened yesterday. Meanwhile, we've got two Israelis charged with using classified intel for polymarket bets. Look, guys, it's your money. Do what you want with it. But understand, if you are placing bets on Polymarket, you are knowingly entering a rigged casino. That is the takeaway from this article. Israeli authorities have filed charges against two suspects accused of using classified information to place bets on prediction platform Polymarket. The suspects, a military reservist and a civilian, were accused of serious security offenses, bribery, and obstruction of justice, according to a joint statement from the Shin Bet Domestic Security Agency, Defense Ministry, and Israeli police on Thursday. The wagers were related to Israel's security operations, the agency said in a statement, without elaborating on the details of the predictions or the sum yielded from those trades. The suspects made predictions on the basis of classified reports, which reservists were exposed to in the context of their role in the military. Prediction markets like Polymarket have come under increased scrutiny for a growing number of contracts on the outcome of military conflicts. Bets over war in the Middle East are popular on the platform, with $238 million placed over the timing of a potential U.S. strike on Iran. Oh my God, we're awful. The degeneracy is just, it's out of control here. People are betting on the timing of wars now. Polymarket bets over the ouster of Venezuela's Nicolas Maduro have also sparked an uproar, with U.S. lawmakers questioning whether some participants who made successful trades were acting on confidential information. But don't worry, guys. We've got financial regulators. We've got white-collar cops on the beat protecting us from such fraud. Oh, that's right. They all quit. As prediction markets boom, the CFTC's flagship office has lost its last enforcement attorney. Oh, good. The Chicago Enforcement Division of the CFTC is known as a group of heavy hitters. Trial attorneys and investigators in the Chicago office have had a role in most major CFTC enforcement actions since the birth of the agency in 1975, including prosecuting self-serving traders on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange in the late 80s and pursuing civil charges against cryptocurrency frauds like Sam Bankman-Fried. In recent months, that office has become a ghost town. A team once comprised of 20 enforcement attorneys now has one. People familiar with the office tell Barron's. After this story was first published, Barris learned that that last remaining lawyer had resigned. That attorney had not responded to a request for comment. So Chingachgook, the last of the Mohicans at the CFTC in Chicago, he just quit. There are no enforcement attorneys in the office at all now. The CFTC has been in flux since Trump's second inauguration, when Caroline Pham was elevated to a CFTC commissioner to the agency's acting chair. Pham undertook a sweeping reorganization of the enforcement division and closed about half of its open cases, sometimes without consulting the team involved in a campaign against litigation she saw as regulation by enforcement. Attorneys from the Chicago office say her leadership represented a major shift in tactics. Guys, do you have any idea how easy it would be to start a crypto fraud right now, knowing all the cops just quit? I mean, I joke about Melon Coin all the time when people make clever comments. I say 100 million Melon Coin for you. Like, if I was a dirtbag, I could so easily siphon tens of millions of dollars from my audience by pumping a crypto scam. It would be incredibly easy to do. I mean, I'm not going to do that, but you guys realize how easy it would be for me to do this, right? And there's a lot I could do with 10 million bucks. And now, like, everybody at the CFTC office in Chicago, their primary office, they all just quit. So who's going to stop me? Freaking nobody. And we wonder why fraud is everywhere. Good God. And we've got two more. We've been warning about private credit for a while here. And I see these two things happening. I see the loans going bad, the extend and pretend. And at the same time, the prices of these loans are going up. How could this be possible? Well, let's start with the bad pick. Private credit companies are deferring loan payments at a higher rate. The share of private equity-backed companies that deferred cash interest payments ticked higher for a third consecutive quarter, pointing to a growing sign of stress, according to Lincoln International. Data from the valuation firm showed that 11% of fourth quarter borrowers paid interest in kind, which is when creditors are given more debt in lieu of cash. All right, I was supposed to pay you $100 worth of interest. Instead, I'm going to add that $100 to the principal that I owe you. Trust me, bro, I'm good for it. Let's call it payment in kind, or PIC. More than 58% of those loans featured so-called bad PIC, meaning that the borrowers opted to delay interest payments during the life of the loan versus when the debt was originated. And bad PIC is when, like, the loan terms we took out made no mention of payment in kind. We're just doing it anyway, even though the terms of the loan don't allow us to do it. We just did it. Who's going to stop me? The CFTC. Yeah. So we're going to call that bad PIC, as opposed to good PIC, I guess, is when they put it in the paperwork ahead of time. While private lenders typically avoid offering flexible covenants like PIC, allowing for it in an initial agreement can help them win deals in a highly competitive credit market. So the use of PIC is on the rise. Issuing bad PIC adds to a company's debt pile without increasing its value. And when a loan-to-value ratio rises, a lender's downside protection erodes. The average loan-to-value ratio for deals with bad PIC has been above 75% since the fourth quarter of 2024, according to Lincoln, compared with 47% in the same period in 2021. And guys, even those statistics, as frightening as they are, 75% loan-to-value ratio is up from 47%. Understand, that's fake too. It's even worse because the V in the LTV, the valuations for these private companies, they're just arbitrary marks made up by the guys who own them. You know, like I could say, hey, remember those Beanie Babies I bought for $5 and $10? Well, now they're worth $15, even though I can't get $15 for it. And so, you know, I'll borrow against them and the loan to value ratio will be low because they're worth $15. I just totally made up that valuation. And so it's even worse than this article makes it seem. None of these companies can pay their debt service. Why? Because they don't make money. And if they don't make money, how are they valued as high as they are? Because the people making up the values are frauds. And who's going to stop them? All the lawyers just quit at the regulators. Meanwhile, Blackstone defies private credit concerns with tight CLO pricing. And let me translate this to you. The price of these loans is going up as all of this happens. How is that possible? Blackstone sold a nearly $1 billion bundle of private credit loans at one of the highest levels this year, signaling strong investor demand despite broader concerns about the direct lending industry. The spreads on the highest rated bonds in the investment vehicle known as collateralized loan obligation priced on Tuesday at 137 basis points over floating rate benchmarks. On average, AAA tranches for private credit CLOs have printed at 140 basis points over the benchmark this year, according to data from Bank of America, tighter than the 153 basis points in 2025 and 180 basis points in 2024. All right, let me translate that for you. Tight spreads means the interest rates are lower, closer to the benchmark, which is like your zero level, only 137 points above that benchmark, where just 2 years ago, they were 180 points above that benchmark. Interest rates are coming down. Remember, with debt, bonds, loans, as the interest rate comes down, the value goes up, which means the prices of these loans are rising, even as the quality of the debt is becoming increasingly obvious that it's dog shit. Firms like Blackstone have been increasingly bundling their private credit debt into CLOs to meet booming investor demand as spreads shrink across corporate bond markets. And why is investor demand booming? Because of President Trump's executive order allowing these alternative assets into pensions, 401ks, and IRAs. This is your money that is being used to bid up the value of this crap debt, even as it goes bad, even as they renege on their payments over and over again. And I've been warning about this. We saw last week this started to blow up. It started in the software space because everybody was worried about AI and the SaaSpocalypse and the software-mageddon, whatever the heck they were calling it on CNBC. Understand, guys, you are the one buying this. If you have any kind of a deferred tax-incentivized retirement plan, chances are you are buying this crap. And I was just moving Gigi's around the other day. We were looking at the options available at her employer's fund. And even some of the funds that were marked as conservative and low risk, when I opened them up, I could see these dog shit Blue Owl asset securitizations lingering inside them. And they're being marketed to investors as safe. They are not. This is happening everywhere. And I don't know what to tell people to do about this, because often your options are very limited with what you're allowed to put your money into in these tax advantage funds. So I don't have the answer to this, guys. All I can tell you is, yo, dirtbags, I see what you're doing, and I'm telling everybody. That's all I can do here. So we got that going for us, which is nice. Hey, I just want to say thank you very much to M&J. Thank you, M&J, for who was it? It had to be Dad. Was it Dad? Somebody leaked it in the comments. Happy birthday to Jack. Thank you very much, M&J. I appreciate it. Yep, I am finally allowed to legally consume alcoholic beverages. Yep, 21 today. Never mind the boat slips and the bald spot. Thank you, M&J. Hunt and Cover says, here's for some candles. All right, thank you very much, Hunt and Cover. I appreciate this. I'm beginning to see a pattern here. Is it going to be one of these? Thank you, Hunt and Cover, for supporting the channel and for the candles. I shall blow them out with you in mind, sir. Snowman 1201 says, wow, it's both RB day. Oh, a fellow Lincolnian. Are you as well, Snowman? Well, happy birthday to the Snowman as well. You frosty February baby, you. Thank you so much, Snowman. Happy birthday, sir. Nashville Pasta Man says, happy birthday, Bubba. All the best to yours and your team for all you guys do. And by guys, I mean the metaphorical guys. Yes, we folks, because there are plenty of gals among the guys here. And I don't know. I mean, this is the 2020s. I think you confuse people when you talk like that. I should probably stop. Anyway. Hey, cheers. Thank you so much, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel, sir. That kind of surgery can be done over the weekend. What was that? Ace Ventura 2 or Ace Ventura 1? Hey, Bob 89. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Says happy playing a little Sinatra in your honor. All right. Thank you, Mr. Sinatra. Appreciate that very much. Thanks, Bob, for supporting the channel. Freckles 73. Happy birthday, Jack. Yep. It's going to be one of those. I am detecting a pattern here. Thank you very much, Freckles. I appreciate the well wishes, the balloon, and the cake. Pasta Man is back again. Says, you know what? They can never suspend withdrawals on the metals you hold. Become your own bank. Buy assets, short the dollar, rest well. Yes, you are accurate. If you hold it, you own it. They can't suspend withdrawals on this. But, let me just throw this one at you, all right? We saw the dysfunction in the paper markets the last few weeks ago, right? We saw when we went to 120, and then we went down to, did we touch the 60s or around 70 even, back up into the mid-80s, low 80s this morning? Didn't we see a lot of coin shops just say we're not buying anything anymore? And isn't that very similar to suspending withdrawals? It's not as shady, right? And I understand why the coin shops did that. It's a nightmare to be a coin shop owner right now. By the way, well wishes to Tim on Yankee Stacking who fell and hurt himself. Get better soon, Tim. Sorry that happened to you, brother. But it is a tough time to run a coin shop right now. They are getting clobbered by this volatility, and a lot of them said they're not buying. And when a coin shop is not buying, have they not suspended withdrawals? Maybe I'm getting a little too philosophical there, but from a certain point of view, Obi-Wan Kenobi. Thank you very much, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel, sir. Ryu Kirito. Ryu. Thank you, Ryu. He says, but the Dow is at 50,000 if you saw Bondi yesterday. I didn't see Bondi yesterday, but I read a lot of the criticism of Bondi yesterday, and there was no shortage of cringe flying around the Twitterverse yesterday associated with Bondi's testimony. Look, guys, pointing to the stock market and say, look how great everything is because Dow 50,000. Yeah, look at what we talked about with bad pick. Look at what we talked about how 401ks are being looted. Look at about the shady accounting at AI firms. Look about the rampant fraud in Polymarket as the CFTC totally hollows out their enforcement office. Yeah, maybe the Dow is at 50,000 because fraud has become legalized and normalized, and nobody really knows what anything is worth because everybody is lying about what everything is worth, and half the people are happy to just go along with it because they're sitting on a huge pile of this stuff that they don't realize if they go to sell it or if too many people go to sell it at any given time, they won't be able to. It's all illiquid garbage, and the marks aren't real, so don't brag about them. Thank you, Ryu, for supporting the channel, sir. Good point. Hey, Barbie 520, welcome to the channel, Barb. Thank you so much. Welcome to the Melon Patch. Thank you for supporting the channel. She became a YouTube member. Just a reminder, guys, you get a free super chat with that membership, so feel free to use that. I will read and respond to your questions live on the air. T.A. Chapman says, happy birthday, Jack. We all know you like the crazy pills. I'm going to need a few more of them today. How about the jobs revisions, though? You know, they were somewhat expected. I expected them to beat last year's near million, though. Sus, maybe crazy pills. We went from what? We were 911,000 downward revisions last year. That's on top of all of the monthly downward revisions, by the way. And then yesterday, we were 898,000 downward revisions. You're talking, what, 13,000 difference from a year? I mean, it's the same thing. It's a rounding error. And by the way, this big, massive downward revision, this now spans 2 years, two presidents, two political parties. Everybody's doing it. And the data, the errors are always in the same direction, which means that the economic data is biased. It's skewed. It's not working. Our instrumentation isn't working. You're driving down the highway. Your speedometer doesn't work. Don't be surprised when you get a freaking speeding ticket or if you get into an accident. Like, this stuff is too important for us to be so bad at this. We have got to get better at this data. There's too much riding on it. I mean, no, we're all taking crazy pills today, T.A. Chapman. Combine that with all the jimmying and jockeying they do with the CPI data. The inflation and the jobs numbers are both heavily manipulated. And then we get Jay Powell talking about how we remain squarely focused on our dual mandate of price stability and maximum employment. How can you tell? You're looking at the same gauge I am, and it doesn't work. All right, T.A. Chapman, thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Jolly Lollipop 1 says, do you like the shiny by any chance? You know, Jolly, as a matter of fact, I like the shiny. That's right, sir. How did you guess? It's amazing. You guys, very intuitive, very insightful. Thank you, Jolly Lollipop, for supporting the channel. Madison Hype 7221 says, GPU as collateralized assets with a five-year life. Get out. Yeah, GTFO, Madison. And, you know, that was one of my first things before I even started looking into CoreWeave. Like, I had just heard the name CoreWeave for the first time, thanks to, shout out to Samantha LaDuke from LaDuke Trading, who was the first person who keyed me into CoreWeave and made me go looking there. And when I realized that $2.3 billion line of credit way back in August of 2023 was responsible for NVIDIA's earnings beat, and I'm like, okay, this line of credit, that's interesting. This company I've never heard of. And then they find that it's collateralized by GPUs. Now, you know, one of my jobs when I used to work in nuclear, I used to manage the shelf life of inventory in the warehouse at the power plant. And, you know, one thing we were constantly doing was throwing out circuit boards because the things go bad in storage. I mean, you can burn them in, but these things all have aluminum electrolytic capacitors that after 10 years, they're basically worthless. They fizzle out just sitting on the shelf. And even when you do install them, they only have a useful life of a couple of years. So, you know, I'm sitting here, I'm like, circuit cards as collateral for a debt? No effing way. That makes no sense. That's like, you know, using my lunch as collateral for a loan. I'm about to eat it. What are they going to do? Repossess it after I eat it? It has no value anymore. I mean, unless you're really weird, maybe it's got some value to you. What you do in your own time, that's your business. So yeah, that was one of the things that first stuck out at me years ago. Been screaming about that and other things for years since then. And you know, but hey, what do I know, right? I'm just a conspiracy theorist slash Twitter rando slash melonhead slash whatever the heck. Thank you, Madison, for supporting the channel. Madison's back again, though, says five-year GPU landmine. Why Mag7 rents GPUs off books? Well, that's why they started to rent them off the books, right? They set up a shell company, put the debt in that shell company, put the ownership of the asset in that shell company. Then when that debt goes bad because the asset is beyond its useful life and they still haven't paid for it, they can be like, well, that's not our losses. Those losses belong to the shell company. Okay, who owns the shell company? Blue Owl Capital. All right, how did they build the shell company? They borrowed $27 billion. Who'd they borrow it from? Your 401k. Isn't it amazing how all roads lead back to that every effing time? Oh, and by the way, your 401k is also loaded up with Meta stock because it's, chances are, it's one of the top 10 holdings in every well-diversified mutual fund that's sitting in your 401k because the concentration risk is ridiculous. But don't worry, it's very diversified. Right? A wide spectrum that includes Microsoft, Google, NVIDIA, Meta, Oracle, all the same freaking trade. And even if there's like, maybe you got some utility stocks in there, maybe you got some Caterpillar or some Corning in there, they're all AI stocks too. It's all the same freaking trade. Thank you, Madison, for supporting the channel. MNJ741G says, Dad is not the guilty party. Well, then it was either mom or it was Mish or Gigi. Somebody did it. Somebody leaked it, and they probably bet on Polymarket before they did it too. Yeah, how's that for a tie-in? Thank you, M&J, for supporting the channel. Madison Hype says, happy birthday, Jack. Thank you, Madison. That's three today. I appreciate the super chat once again and the support of the channel. Lisa BV2 says, happy birthday. Thank you, Lisa. I appreciate that. And the red balloon to match the flags that Ernst & Young has raised over at Meta as well. Pasta Man's back. He says, I can buy, sell with friends, neighbors, as God intended. It is money. You can always do that. You can barter with it. It's slow and it's cumbersome and it's inefficient, but you're right. You do have that backup plan, that insurance policy against absolute catastrophe, which is an excellent reason to own metal. And I would add that's an excellent reason to own small denomination metal if you're trying to buy, sell, barter with friends and neighbors. Also keep in mind, as you get smaller and smaller in denominations of the shiny, the premiums tend to rise, but there's one exception. The best deal right now by far on silver product, you can still get 90% constitutional silver, otherwise known as junk silver, pre-64 U.S. coinage for less than spot. And when it comes to a worst case barter scenario, that is the best low denomination silver you can get your hands on. So I'll just throw that one out there. Check out findbullionprices.com where you can search and sort and find the best deals on that stuff. Thank you, Pasta Man, for supporting the channel. Arbitrage, he's back. He says, happy birthday. Thank you, Mr. Robert B. Traj, or the Arbitrager. Thank you, sir, for supporting the channel. Guys, I really appreciate all the birthday wishes. Thank you very much. And I appreciate everybody having your coffee with the Melonheads this morning. Don't forget that like button and that subscribe button for you new guys on the way out. Come on back tomorrow. Thank you so much for the birthday wishes, the super chats, as well as you magnanimous Melonheads on YouTube, Patreon, and Buy Me a Coffee. Links are down below should you feel so inclined. Don't forget that like button. I already said that. Hi, Mom. Hi, Dad. Love you guys. Everybody, till next time, live small and dream big.